seen anything like that.
I'm a very confident front runner. I've caddied for 33 years, 145 wins now, and that's the best win I've ever had.
I have no idea what you have.
I don't know. How are we going to count all the shots? I can't keep track.
Fuck! God damn it!
I don't think he's pleased.
Of course you would. That's a particularly stupid question. It's the Irish Open. Of course you want to play at the weekend.
Hello, you're welcome along to Golf Weekly. It's a busy one as the WGC match play continues. We've had the Arnold Palmer. Tiger Woods has launched his new book. There is much to talk about. Nathan Murphy, hello to you.
How's it going?
And Dave McIntyre, hello to you.
Evening, gents.
Fionn once again away, travelling the world, all that sort of business. So, lots of texts and tweets. We've now started getting emails in. Very exciting.
Who do they email you?
Well, it came to Joe Malloy at newstalk.com. I don't think we have a Golf Weekly one, or if we do, it's never opened.
Yeah. I don't even want to say that we should get one because it will never be opened.
Paul Davidson. Hello, Paul. Emailed twice, no less.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Needy.
I was worried too when I saw the two Paul Davidsons, but it's okay. So he starts off by saying, I'm pleased to say I'm a fully certified friend of the pod. One of the highlights of my week.
Did you actually send a certificate out to him?
Not yet.
It's an idea, though. Seldom.
A good friend of mine's father is a long-time member at Royal County Down. I've been lucky enough to play it loads of times with him and his dad for £12. His father also played on Walker Cup teams back in the 60s, and although getting on in years, he still knows how to weave his way around a tricky course. During the round, he would often tell stories from his playing days, and he recounted one from around the time the Walker Cup was played in Portmarnock in 1991. A group of American Walker Cup players came up for a round at Royal County Down, of which Phil Mickelson was one. A few members, including the aforementioned, ended up following them on the round. Mickelson was around 20, 21 years of age at the time, but a serious talent, as you'd imagine. Phil was hitting an 8-iron into a par 4 on the back 9, and he had a beautiful shot. It bounced twice, checked, and slowly trundled up before dropping into the hole for eagle. The six or so spectators all applauded, but one wise guy quipped, "A tenner if you do it again." Everyone laughed. Phil nonchalantly dropped another ball onto the turf before hitting exactly the same shot, which hit exactly the same spot on the green, bounced twice, checked, and slowly trundled
up on.
Before dropping into the hole for eagle again! 3! As you can imagine, the guys went daft. Phil didn't even turn around. He just repaired the divot and tapped it with his club, still with his back turned to the group, signalling the wise guy in the group to cough up the tenner, which he duly did. My friend's father said it was the most amazing thing he had ever seen in golf. I hope you like the story and keep up the great work.
He holed 2 4-irons in a row.
It's Phil Mickelson.
Come on!
With an 8-iron. It's possible.
Sorry, 2 8-irons.
There's no great pressure on him. It's the sort of thing he can do. That was certainly the highlight of Phil's trip to Ireland in 1991.
They lost, did they, badly?
Well, he insulted the women of Ireland during that trip. Do you remember this?
Called them ugly.
I don't know if he used the word ugly, but something along those lines when he was in Portmarnock. And yeah, it didn't go down too well, obviously.
Was Paul's first email good enough to make you want to hear the second?
What is it? There's more.
This is email two.
Wow.
Go for it.
Hi, Joe. Doesn't say he loves the pod this time.
Oh.
My friend's father is David Madley. I don't think he'd mind me telling that story.
How many friends has he got?
No, it's the same guy. He's saying, you know, it's in relation to my previous email.
This guy's got more stories than Phil.
I was just thinking of the first email. It's like Phil was telling the story. my friend's father is David Madley. I don't think he would mind me telling that story about Phil. He also told the story that Tiger Woods used to regularly play at Royal County Down the week before the British Open, often with Mark O'Meara. Often they would tee it off really early, around 6:30. Anyway, my friend, who's a member, was also playing early in the morning, first week of July, and they were walking to the first tee box only to notice quite a small crowd had gathered in anticipation of Woods and O'Meara teeing off. They thought, what's this all about? Only to realise a friend of ours was playing in the four ball that morning. His name was Trevor Woods. What had happened was the timesheet had gone up the previous evening and it had just read, T. Woods, visitor. People had put two and two together, unfortunately getting it wrong. So a lot of disappointed guys had got out of bed at 6 a.m. in the morning to see an electrician from Belfast called Trevor Woods tee off. Best Paul Davidson. Oh, well done, Paul.
Paul's my new favourite.
That's good.
That was better than the first story.
That's great stuff. For Trevor Woods, the pressure.
Wow.
Oh, dear, yeah, good stuff.
Keep them coming, Paul.
Emails. Get those stories coming on. Tweets, then. loads of tweets this week. I'll skip through some of them because time's slightly against us today. Hugh Fitzpatrick, listening to the pod on the way back from Warsaw. Nothing like at Golf Weekly NT pod to ease the pain of your legs. Squashed. Hashtag aisle seat. Thought you two would like that as two frequent flyers. Colin Greensmith on Jason Day. Looks like he had good reason for missing so much play this year. Yeah, we'll come to that. Killian Conway. Lads, following on from a comment by Amaloy Joe re Flash AstroTurf gear, do you have the same thoughts about golf attire and equipment? It's basically saying quite often it's the worst player at Astro who has the flashiest gear.
Yeah.
I was tempted at one stage to go for the full Ricky Fowler orange getup.
When?
No.
When he first started wearing
it. You're about 10 years older than him for a start.
That's irrelevant.
Well, it's really
it's totally irrelevant.
A golfer of your age should not be garbed in Fowler getup.
I don't know if full orange would work for you.
When was this?
So this is about 5 years ago.
Oh my god! What?
So that's terrible. No, even he's dialed it back.
They had like a lot of that really nice Puma gear.
Puma gear.
Yeah,
not really nice.
But I was thinking, right, the orange maybe a little bit garish, but the other stuff they have is really
okay.
class.
Okay. And you're going
to
go full orange.
But I was tempted to just rock up someday playing golf full orange. Like, which is worse, full orange or white pants?
White pants, I think, are the worst.
I wouldn't have thought so, no.
If there's one guy here who is going to rock up in white pants.
Yeah. I might, for our next outing, I might just buy myself a pair of white pants just to spite you.
That wouldn't surprise me at all.
You need to be really, really good to make white pants not look
awful. You shouldn't be allowed to wear that trend. You shouldn't be allowed to wear white pants unless you're single figure at best.
Agreed.
The three of us will be relatively plain Jane when it comes to our golf attire, I think.
We're not good enough to wear anything better.
Free stuff.
A lot of the stuff we wear is free, yeah.
We're hoping for some green Under Armour gear.
Yeah, let's be
honest. Sometime soon. Richard Jones liked Shane Ryan last week. The only man that can put Dustin Johnson and Sherlock Holmes together in the same sentence and make it work. Aaron Grantham, he listened to the coverage of Arnie's tournament on Sunday and heard Graeme McDowell doing commentary. It was pretty good. Wonders if it's maybe a new career for Graeme.
We've spoken about this before. I think so.
No, I hope not. As in,
really?
I'd like to think that he's got a few more decent years on the golf course, and that he can postpone a career in punditry.
Mm. Yeah, but I think he is the type of character who you could definitely see going full time on the circuit. The way the distances are going, he's already one of the shorter hitters on the PGA Tour.
Yeah,
vocally frustrated by that, and I've seen him a few times over the last couple of years in the commentary box. He is brilliant.
Is he?
Which is pretty.
I thought he would be a bit too nicey-nice.
No, he's good. He's good in the technical stuff now. I guess that'd be the difference when he retires, whether he'd be willing to
criticise.
Twist the knife.
Yeah. Mm.
If he replaces Monty, he can have the job now.
Harrington is brilliant as well.
Well, yeah, yeah. Harrington mixes both. He can do everything and is not afraid to just say
Harrington,
the truth about lots
Harrington
of players.
Is going to be key part of Sky's coverage at the Masters.
He's a great choice, yeah. Ryan Connolly, lads, can you confirm which golfer is concerned about counting his shots in the interesting? My mate thinks it's Jordan Spieth at the Masters last year.
No, not quite.
Kevin Na, isn't it?
It's Kevin Na and the trees.
Yeah. It's about 7 or 8 years old, that.
Yeah, he took a 17, I think.
Did he?
He basically ends up in the trees off a tee shot. I think he then hits a Provo into the trees as well.
Yeah.
And he just gets so frustrated that he starts hacking his way through the shrubbery and the undergrowth.
Yeah.
And the caddy can't. He starts hacking so quickly that the caddy can't keep track of how many shots he's hit. They had to get the TV cameras to rewind and figure out what score he needed to put on his card.
I remember watching it live,
having
to catch it. And there were definitely at least 3 or 4 shots where he hacked at the shrubbery and the ball just didn't move.
Yeah, well, we're watching on YouTube.
It can happen to anyone, I guess. So listening to the Shane Ryan interview says John Moore makes the Monday train ride to work in Melbourne, Australia bearable. Keep up the good work. Good man, John. Thanks for tweeting us. Simon Madden said, this is the type of ridiculous behaviour that is ruining the game of golf. He had a screen grab of a caddy lying flat on the green reading a putt for his pro player stood behind him. Wasn't a fan of that, Simon. Carol Smurf saw the picture of Nathan Murphy, Kevin Kilbane and Fionn Davenport at the Etihad Stadium, where Nathan said, at Golf Weekly on tour. And Carol replied, the Irish version of Take That and Better Looking Too. Obvs. Irony.
Hmm.
Darren Maher listening to the
you're
three good looking men, I suppose, actually.
Said it, Joe.
Fionn's very photogenic, man. Kev,
take that. Take that, we're really only a threesome for a short period of time.
They currently are a threesome.
Yeah, for a short period of time.
Darren Maher says, I'm listening to the Golf Weekly NT podcast in Tromso, Norway. You definitely need winter warmers and orange balls here. Hashtag love the pod. Very snowy in that picture. Speaking of Bubba's pink balls now that he's playing with. So I just was looking into it. He's hitting the ball 30, 40 yards shorter.
Really?
That is what he has signed up for here.
What?
Yeah.
Is that why his game has gone to shit?
He also can't move the ball. The ball won't move as much in the air. You can't shape it
That's
the way he was.
That's career suicide.
I know.
So when you say he signed up for it, is it charity related, the fact that they're pink balls, breast cancer awareness or something?
Money. It's a new brand of ball.
That's going to destroy his ability to make money.
He hasn't done anything in a year.
Yeah.
Bad time to be 34 yards short off the tee with Augusta around the corner as you look for your third green jacket.
Yeah. No, I heard that this week from a very reliable source, so I don't know what he's playing at. It can't be just greed, because as you said, it's going to be, you know, it's a false economy there. It destroys his game. Make a lot more money from tournaments yeah. than a ball deal. So I don't know. That can't last, that situation. Phil says, lads, enjoyed the podcast last week and Shane's piece. Love hearing about players behind the scenes. Anurang Upal, for all the exotic places people mention they listen from, how's this? Making my breakfast, listening to the pod. Andy took a picture, which was appreciated. Sean Walsh, just heard the Castleknock pod. Great insights from Mr. Galise and Mr. Brown, who was +5 when he turned pro. Brown. It's Conor Deegan-esque. Very enjoyable, lads. Cheers. Thanks, Sean. Paul Russell, you missed the best golf book out of your list last week, lads. Gareth Kramer's Still Power beats the Bob Rotella book, hands down.
Oh, it's an instruction book, is it?
Yeah.
Nah.
Tom Proctor, I'm rambling around New Orleans listening to the pod a few weeks back. He includes a picture. It eased the Mardi Gras hangover. Hashtag has Fionn been. Oh, I'd say so. Oh, yeah. Fionn did a brilliant culture show from New Orleans last year with his RTE radio show. Really good. No one here has been to New Orleans, have they?
No. I find it strange, though, firstly, the places people listen to Golf Weekly. Mm. Because that picture, it did look as though it was a bustling New Orleans when he was listening to Golf Weekly.
Yeah.
Like, you're in New Orleans, it's Mardi Gras, there's a lot going on, and you're going, I'm just listening to the lads in Golf Weekly.
Don't undersell the pod.
Yeah. Come on, it's a community. We're all friends. We're there with him.
We're not really.
Lloydo, wow, guys, with all these pods lately, you're really supporting us. We are. I mean, well done us. Sorry, a lot of tweets this week. Jimmy,
it's a good thing.
Jimmy 8928.
It's an ever-growing community.
I'm in the last couple. Listening to the At Golf Weekly NT pod from the world's 24th best course, which is Cape Wickham. Though found two of my playing partners a little slippery, and he had a picture of two dangerous looking snakes in the rough, and I did not like that.
No.
So if you're playing Cape Wickham, there are snakes in the rough. Hashtag just saying. Hashtag don't go there. Jeff Linnell, another great podcast from Golf Weekly NT, but was it good enough for Fionn Davenport to get his place back?
Isn't clearly not.
This seat has merely been kept warm, Fionn.
Fionn's outside the window right now banging the glass. And please. The variety of the last few pods, says Peter Horn, has been excellent. It will take a while to change handicap culture. And Peter is listening from Malta. WGC is underway in Austin. The big news on day one, aside from McIlroy losing and Spieth losing and Dustin Johnson crushing Webb Simpson, it was embarrassing for Webb Simpson from the first hole. It was just like, oh, destroyed him. The big story was Jason Day, who dropped out of the tournament and his match, obviously, after 6 holes and has withdrawn from the tournament and then decided to hold a press conference. Nobody, I think, had even heard whispers of the details of what was going on in Jason Day's life. So he sat down, and if you didn't see it, he spends maybe a good minute and a half, which I've cut out from this audio, just very upset. He can't compose himself. And then eventually he explained to the media that it wasn't his back or any injury that was causing him bother. It was, unfortunately, something far more serious.
My mom's been here for a while. And she has lung cancer. At the start of the year, she was diagnosed with 12 months to live. It's so hard. The diagnosis is much better being over here. She's going in for surgery this Friday. And it's really hard to even comprehend being on a golf course right now because of what she's gone through. To Michelle, all the tests done in Australia, and the doc said she was terminal and she only had 12 months to live, and I'm glad I brought her over here because of it. And it's been really hard to play golf lately in this year. It's been very, very emotional, as you can tell. I've already gone through it once with my dad, and I know how it feels, and it's hard enough to see another one go through it as well. So as of now, I'm going to try and be back there with my mum for surgery and make sure everything goes right with her. I mean, once again, it's been a very, very hard time for me to be even thinking about playing golf. And emotionally, it's been wearing on me for a while. And I know my mum says not to let it get to me, but it really has. So I just need some time away with her to make sure that everything goes well, because this has been very, very tough for me. So I'm going to do my best and try and be there the best I can for her, because she is the reason that I'm playing golf today.
And then at that point, they gave a nod, stood up, walked out of the press conference, and anybody who'd been saying, geez, why is this guy not playing so much golf this year, way too injury prone, suddenly thought, oh, jumped the gun a bit there. Dreadful stuff on every level.
Yeah, he was incredibly brave to come in and do a press conference, because all he needed to do was release the statement. I guess he had seen and knew of a lot of what was being said about his pretty persistent injury problems and withdrawals from tournaments, that maybe he felt that now was the time, I need to get this out there as to why, especially a tournament like this where if you don't play, somebody else gets your place. But we're 2 weeks away from the Masters. He has another focus right now, and by the sounds of that, he's just, he clearly, he'd been told, he'd spoken to his mother, she's saying, go continue your career, play golf. He gets on the course and he just can't concentrate.
No, understandable. Interesting that it was a terminal diagnosis in Australia, and lucky for him,
better now.
Unlike a lot of us really in that position where you would just have to accept the medical treatment that's available to you in your own country, he has the finances to go to America and seek better help. So he seemed to be saying it's a more positive outlook over here, and there's surgery and maybe a chink of hope in that terminal diagnosis. But we don't know how the illness will progress, but potentially like that's just going to completely dominate his life for the next year.
Well, I suppose we'll get an insight into how successful the surgery has been if he tees it up at Augusta in a couple of weeks' time.
Yeah.
If he's not there, well, maybe that gives an indication as to how it's gone. But I mean, Nathan's right, you just throw a statement out there, you don't have to face the press at all. It was incredibly brave, really powerful stuff to watch. I watched it last night. I saw on social media some people were comparing him to Tiger Woods with all the injuries and the niggles, and he doesn't know if he's ever able to complete 72 holes, and you never know when day's going to break down next, and is it his back, is it his vertigo, is it his thumb, and all the different injuries he's had. Well, there you go, that's the reason. You can really can't be concentrating on trying to win a golf tournament if that kind of stuff is going on in your head.
Well, we don't know that, is the only other thing. That
there might be an injury as well.
No, I think there's every chance there were a lot of injuries also. But again, maybe you can relate all that back to the stress he's been going through over the last while. But there was no opportunity to ask him the question. Like he said at some stage, oh, my back is fine.
Yeah.
So presumably then there was a back problem. I don't think he was using those injuries as an excuse. Maybe there wasn't the temptation to push himself back because he was happy enough at home. But I think he's had his injury problems as well.
So I mean, we wish her well, and she's obviously an amazing person. Everybody's familiar with the Day story, and his father Alvin died of stomach cancer when Day was 12, and he was going off the rails, and she certainly sorted out resources available to her to get him to that private school where he met his caddy stroke coach and completely turned his life around. So she's obviously a very, very special person to him, needless to say. What would be just unknowable at this point is if her diagnosis remains terminal and he's got 12 months left with his mother. Can he even think about playing a golf tournament, or does he just take the full year out and eke out every minute possible in family time? So, I mean, we don't know. Whatever he wants to do, good luck to him. But
what you're saying there makes it understandable as well why players keep these things to themselves and why they don't make it public. Because if he does come back, every first question will be, how's your mother?
Yeah.
And maybe he doesn't always want to talk about it. Yeah. Maybe he just wants to park his private life now, which is quite a difficult thing to do.
Mm. Yeah, people mean well, but it's obviously, it's just what you're going to say to him. So Jason Day is out of the WGC match play in Austin, which is progressing along. So, I mean, we'll be out of date when a lot of you hear this. We're kind of recording half past five on a Thursday evening. We've certainly had day one to digest the headline news. Rory McIlroy beaten 2-1 by Søren Kjeldsen. I was kind of thinking the last time him and Kjeldsen would have been hanging out together would have been at Royal County Down when McIlroy was presenting the Irish Open trophy to
when Rory
to
had to hang around for the weekend having missed the cut.
Yeah. So 2-1 he beat him, and it doesn't actually seem McIlroy that McIlroy played badly at all.
He was 4-under. 317.
Yeah.
Beaten by a guy that shoots 6-under.
6-under, yeah.
He was giving up an average of 36 yards per hole to McIlroy. And McIlroy pretty much said afterwards, look, I probably would have beaten everybody else in the field.
Yeah.
I just came up against a guy that four successive birdies on 14, 15, 16 and 17. And this his approach to 17, par 3, stitched to within 3 feet to seal the match. I mean, that's pretty impressive stuff.
As you said, Dave, I played well. McIlroy said, if I played anyone else, I might have won. Søren played great. Don't think, so I think I have to give him credit. He played really well from the first hole. Wedge play sharp all day. He didn't miss a putt. 6-under for 17 holes is really good here. Kjeldsen said, my record in this tournament is awful. I was actually thinking about this driving to the course this morning. But he turned that around. If you take this week, and I know we don't know how McIlroy is going to do against Woodland and Emiliano Grillo, but if you take this week and his performance across the Arnold Palmer at Bay Hill, his driving was just outrageous.
His driving yesterday was just outrageous.
Was it? He had four drives over 360 yards in distance at Bay Hill. The longest drive was 383 yards. This was at sea level.
He hit one yesterday, 410 yards.
Is Austin at sea level?
It was downhill.
Right.
Yeah, and he took a real kick. He also skipped off the path as well on one of the fairway crossings. Right. That gave him an extra 30 or 40 yards on top of that.
Watching him at Bay Hill in that final round, because his driving was so good, he had a ton of wedges from about 95, 90 yards in. A lot of 89 yards wedges for whatever reason. Really sharp. Really good. Because this is his last event before Augusta.
Mm.
He might make the weekend, he might not. I think only Dustin Johnson... a year ago when they had this format, he was the only player to be beaten in the opening round and make the weekend. But either way, McIlroy gets three rounds. But he's now at the point at Augusta where the swing looks good enough. If he has a decent time on the greens, then he's really on.
His short game was brilliant last week. He hit one delightful chip on 16 after he airmailed the green on the par 5, and he badly needed a 4, and he just stuck beautiful little runner over the lip of the green and down towards the pin. It was just beautiful to watch. Hold the putt then, but he was very aggressive on 17 and 18, and that cost him.
Yeah, he did three putt on 18, if memory serves.
He did, but he had a 12-foot birdie putt. And he just wanted to make sure he got it up to the cup, and he just went 5-6 feet past and missed on the way back. But he looked really good. Look, he was one over after two rounds.
Yeah.
So to come back and finish 9-under and miss out in a playoff by just two shots isn't a bad way.
He was outside the top 100 strokes gained putting on Thursday, and he was...
His longest putt on Thursday was less than 5 foot.
Made.
And that was for a double bogey.
Yeah, he was atrocious on the greens Thursday. Like, outside the top 100, he was 40-something on the Friday, and then his brilliant third round Saturday, he was 9th strokes gained putting. Which again, not that this is a new point, if he can just be in the top 15 strokes gained putting, he will win everything.
Yeah, that was my thinking after last weekend. We can park any conversation about where Rory is fitness-wise.
Yeah.
He looks perfect.
Yeah.
But we are heading into the Masters with the same question marks we probably would have had if he'd been playing for the last few weeks. It's all going to come down to, does he have 4 days where everything just clicks? Now, the fact his short game is in such good shape, probably far better than it was this time last year, means if that happens at Augusta, he's going to be giving himself far shorter putts.
Yeah. But he can't go to Augusta making 5 feet as his longest putt.
No.
No. And he has to also do it for four rounds. Well, maybe do it for three rounds and then you somehow just grind it out.
Yeah.
But he can't be starting as slow as he is. And like, you raised that question there. Like, the Saturday, how much do you read into the Saturday when he's pretty much out of the competition already and there's no pressure and suddenly everything just works?
Yeah.
Well, the course was playing tough on Sunday and he shot 3 under. But it's the par 5s at Augusta. That's his biggest issue, isn't it? He has not played the par 5s well since 2011. That has to change. Mm. I mean, if he needs to hit greens. And on the par 5s at Augusta, if you hit your greens, well, then you probably will be left with a lot of lag putts for birdie. That's crucial for him.
Mark Leishman won without having to do much.
Well,
it was really boring.
He holed a monster putt for eagle on 16.
Did you say it or he?
No, it.
Oh.
I like Mark Leishman's fine.
Yeah.
A big, good story as well.
Yeah, great story. Yeah.
Like, his putt on 16, you have to watch it again.
He's the guy whose wife was very, very ill.
She was in a coma. Yeah. She was given a 5% chance of surviving. She had this bacterial infection that affected her respiratory system. She didn't realise, obviously, the perilous situation she was in, but the family were devastated. He had to take some time off playing some golf. But she woke up from the coma. She came back from it. She was there with her two kids.
Pregnant.
She was what? Pregnant. Is pregnant now.
She looked pregnant.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
But
that's dangerous territory.
They're two
she
kids.
She was pregnant.
The two kids
she
are currently.
She was pregnant.
I'd Google that afterwards. I made a quick edit.
You really jumped in there.
Oh, dear.
I thought she was expecting.
It's like
well,
when you stand up on a bus.
Oh,
right.
Oh, you're just fat. All right.
I've always liked Leishman since he played with Adam Scott in the final round at Augusta when Scott won the Masters, and there's a great picture of when Scott holds the winning putt in Leishman.
First Aussie. Yeah,
yeah. Leishman's in the background.
He did hold a big putt per par on 18 as well. Like he got it done really well.
Well, the putt in 16 is just a bit of a fluke, isn't it?
Yeah, but you need them to win big tournaments. No. And like McIlroy holds one big putt and he'll win the tournament.
Yeah. Dustin Johnson, I should just mention from yesterday, like Johnson is seeking to win his third straight tournament here. So he's won the Genesis Open and he won in Mexico, obviously, in his last 2 outings. He just made a mockery of poor Webb Simpson. It was embarrassing for Webb.
He must be a nightmare to play in World Match Play when he's
right now
playing the way he is.
They were making the point, they think one of the big, it was on the television on the Golf Channel, I think it was Frank Nabilo was just pointing out that, you know, every time Johnson warms up in the range now, he's got his track man. And so he knows exactly how far he's hitting his wedges and his irons. And they think they've been doing that for the past year. So each day, you know, swing's in good shape. His body's in great shape. Goes to the range, knows I'm hitting my 7-iron 184 yards. He is dialed in, ready to go. I'm surprised everyone isn't using TrackMan on the range in the warm-up. Because some days you're hitting it further than others. Yeah. Or, you know, the weather is changeable. But that's you'll see Johnson on the range. He's got his TrackMan. Looks like an iPad just kind of on the ground behind him. So he destroyed Webb Simpson. Jordan Spieth. Woefully out of sorts yesterday. Lost to Hideto Tanahara.
Hideto?
38 years old. He lost by 4-2. Spieth said if it was a normal WGC event, it would have been my worst score of the season. I don't think he could hit a green to save his life.
It was a bad day for the big names. The list here of those that didn't win, for whatever reason.
Yeah.
McIlroy, Snedeker, Spieth, Furyk, Reed, Kuchar, Zach Johnson, Walker, Willett, Day, Westwood, Garcia. For various reasons.
Yeah.
All didn't win yesterday. Mm. So day apart, they all have to win today. So yesterday was interesting because all these big names were beaten. Today's going to be even more interesting because they all have to win to have a chance going into round three.
I want to ask you if that justifies the format. But just an interesting thing. Bubba Watson beat Snedeker.
Yeah.
And it turned out, he revealed afterwards, Snedeker had given him lots of tips with his game, which had helped him a lot.
Before the draw was made.
I presume it's before the draw was made, yeah. So here's, you know, Watson was asked, like, so what were some of the things that he told you?
He said my ball position with my with all my clubs are pretty bad. He said my shoulder's rocking up in the air. What else did he say? He said a lot of things, a lot of negative things, it seemed like. He said I need to get my the handle, whatever that meant, the handle more forward in front of my ball. Lean the shaft forward, I guess. I don't know what that all that means, but he did it with his hand, so he moved it in the right position. But and then he said my stroke was too short on the backswing and too long on the follow through, so I need to rotate that. So I need to be longer on the backswing and shorter on the forward swing or the follow through, I guess.
I think it's his putting specifically.
Yeah, the only time you're ever going to go to Snedeker for a tip is on your putting.
Especially if you're Bubba.
Now,
how do you hit the ball so short, Brant?
Brant's doing a lot of talking and Bubba's like, maybe just show me.
Yeah.
A lot of words there. I thought you were just going to say that Snedeker turned around and said, get rid of the pink ball.
No, I mean, that would be the obvious
Pink ball does sound like some sort of quite sore medical condition that Bubba has this.
Why?
Bubba's got the big ball.
Why is Snedeker helping Bubba Watson with his game? I thought
they do that all the time. Stricker used to help people with their short game.
They don't all hate him. They couldn't.
Snedeker, kind of peculiar.
Snedeker, if you remember before the Ryder Cup last year, really came out in strong defence of Bubba and was not happy with the discussion around Bubba's absence.
He's just misunderstood.
The Ryder Cup team. Well, he was saying, like, you're all saying he's not in the team because we hate him. Snedeker came out in the press conference. We played the audio and he was saying, like, this is not true. You need to stop this. It's really actually unfair on Bubba. Now, then again, everyone else we talked to and all the confidential polls, the anonymous polls, suggest Bubba's not well
otherwise.
Liked. But maybe him and Brandt have a little friendship going.
I'm really struggling to develop a love for this tournament.
Okay.
It's difficult to really get your teeth into because
since the format change.
No, even like I went through all of the previous stagings of the tournament today, and I probably had to really genuinely go back to 2000 when I was in my local pub watching Tiger being beaten by Darren Clark over 36 holes in an incredible final.
Were you cursing at the TV?
No, why? I did. That was before my love affair with Darren had begun. But the pub was packed. It was like watching an Ireland match.
Yeah.
It was a Sunday night and everyone was roaring at the TV. And remember that moment where Darren, in between the two 18s, was lying on his golf bag smoking a cigar.
Yeah.
Tiger was on the range and the whole pub cheered. It was amazing. And there were, it was the early years of the World Golf Championship, so it was a massive deal.
Yeah.
I can't remember a World Match Play Championship that I've enjoyed since.
I enjoyed the ones at the Mountain.
What was it?
Dove Mountain.
So did I.
Spectacular backdrop, cool kind of looking course on TV. Another one of crowds there. There were some big ones. There was a McIlroy-Westwood match 1 year. I'm talking about
Mahan beat McIlroy in 2012 final. I remember that being exciting.
Because McIlroy had beaten Westwood in the semi.
Yeah.
And then he had Mahan in the final and it was great and a big deal. Now, there's been times Matt Kuchar's won it and it's been very, very slow and sleepy.
Yeah.
There was, who could forget Day against our French Ryder Cup boy.
De Buisson.
Now, that was special.
That was last year's final.
We all realised.
That was good.
No, pre-Ryder Cup 2014.
Really?
Yeah, because that was when
Day beat last year? Is Day not the defending champion?
He is,
he won it twice?
He is the defending champion. That was the year we realised De Buisson had a short game from the gods because he was like hacking it out from rocks and stuff.
Oh, sir, well, that match is detailed in detail in Shane Ryan's book. That he goes through all those miracle recovery shots that De Buisson produced in the last four holes of that match.
So match play is always going to be a victim of its pairings.
Yeah, and
if they're not good.
But also, they changed this because they felt they didn't want to be taking players halfway around the world for 15 holes of golf, potentially. It still has the exact same problem, which is it gets less interesting quite often as the week goes on and there's only two matches on the course by the time we get to Sunday. But what it did have was one of the best days of golf in the year on the opening day when it was straight knockout, 64 in the world against number one in the world. It was interesting.
Yeah.
Whereas now, who gives a damn?
There was an element yesterday as Kelson was leading and getting towards the finish line where in previous years we would have all been on
like Kelson Twitter. Beating Rory would be a
huge.
Big story.
Whereas yesterday, I think we said, oh, Kelson's going to beat him here. Oh, is he? Right. Then McIlroy will have to.
There's also nobody there. I watched it for about 90 minutes last
this
night.
This is a key point for me.
And there was about 10 minutes and I didn't see one spectator on the course.
Why would that be the case in Austin?
It's a Wednesday for a start. Maybe there's not a lot of people that can get out and watch golf on a Wednesday.
As opposed to Thursday, Friday?
Well, I suppose the later in your week you get, maybe there is the more chance people might just.
It seemed incredibly dead. The TV coverage was dead. There was no real atmosphere. There was no tension.
Right.
It's hard to watch a tournament that where the spectators couldn't be arsed turning up for it.
Well, also, I don't remember too many players not turning up when it was a straight knockout. The odd time you may get one or two players filling in, which will always just happen.
Yeah.
But this time you've got five or six players not
playing.
I think
the year before it changed, 2014 was the last straight knockout year and there were a lot of pullouts that year.
Well, Stenson's not playing this year because it's not straight knockout. He said, what's the point of match play?
You can't please everybody.
If you can lose but still progress.
Yeah.
Plus there's no playoff holes anymore. You can have your match now as well.
Yeah.
So there's no one going down the 19th.
I'm into it. I love match play. I find it really enjoyable. I will be watching all weekend.
I'll watch it from the knockout stage.
Yeah.
Day won $1.62 million last year. When you take the exchange rates into account, it's more than Stenson won for winning the Open Championship.
Obviously, Sunday can be a wet blanket. Like, I really don't want to see
Pierre Fulke, Steve Stricker final.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Shane Lowry halved his first match with Sergio Garcia.
Yeah, he's up against John Rahm, one of the men of the moment today.
That's not easy.
Two of the kind of mid-20s, hopefully potential superstars over the next 10 years up against each other.
Right.
McIlroy against Woodland.
Shane is heading...
I'm being generous there,
aren't I? You're being extremely generous. Shane's heading towards late 20s at this stage.
Dustin Johnson, Martin Keimer is an interesting one.
Yeah, that's the all major winners in that group. Webb Simpson, Keimer, Dustin
West
Johnson.
West Hayes and Furyk, another two major winners up against each other.
Right.
Yeah, look, there's some good golf to be watched, but be careful what you wish for. You spent yesterday and today salivating over the prospect of all these big guns that have been knocked out. You get to Friday and you're like, oh, here we go.
Yeah.
There's nothing worth watching now.
Yeah, okay. We'll talk about that in full detail next week.
A mention for Graham McDowell. We mentioned him earlier for his co-commentary abilities. He's playing at the Puerto Rico Open this week.
Oh, no.
Winner's check, $540,000. A measly $540,000.
You mentioned that in Rahm and Lowry, maybe you're looking at two players who can go and achieve great things in the next 10 years. The lineup for that tournament is sort of European Ryder Cup players from the last 10 years who are just about hanging on. Poulter's playing over there as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I saw D.A. Point, who I remember backing, watching him win a PGA Tour event a couple of years ago. He's in it.
Right.
But it just shows...
AT&T Pro-Am, didn't he?
Was it that one? No, it was that one.
Yeah.
It just shows how poor the European Tour is in terms of what it can offer at times. I know it's very difficult for the European Tour to compete with the PGA Tour, but you've got a winner's check of over $500,000 for the secondary competition on the PGA Tour this week.
Well, WGC is a co-sanctioned event, is it not?
It is. I think you'll find the WGC is very much a European Tour event.
Yeah.
The world's leading golf tour. And certainly my favourite.
Our favourite.
Our favourite.
It's not yet.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
We're open to offers right now.
April 6th, give or take.
Don't blow your wad here, boys.
Dave McIntyre, you pretty much have to go. Nathan and I will go through some of the Tiger Woods stuff, unless you want to stay for a minute or two. Or do you have to
go? You know
what?
I'm going to give you another couple of minutes.
Okay. Wow.
That's how much I enjoy your company.
Well, then feel free to move at any stage here.
Okay, if I just disappear, our listeners will know why.
Yeah.
The way I disappeared in Castleknock that day, just upped and vanished.
Yet to go. So I'll start with the more interesting stuff then. Tiger Woods has released his 1997 Masters book, The 1997 Masters, My Story. Lots, huge swathes of it, by all accounts, are very boring. Alan Shipnuck was tweeting that. Not great. Tiger's very private. But there were some juicier bits about his childhood that we didn't know before. So Woods talked about being disappointed when he rocked up to Augusta National as an amateur in 95. He said, maybe I was underwhelmed because the club had excluded black golfers from playing for so long. My dad said a couple of days later that Magnolia Lane didn't impress a black golfer because of the history. And look, his dad is just an odd person. And there's probably stuff you can say on the record and off the record about his dad. Woods says... his father verbally abused his son this is Ewan Murray writing a review. His father verbally abused his son in the driving range, with Woods able to use a code word if he felt the barrage had become too much. Like a code word. That's reminiscent of a whole other sphere. I was a quitter if I used the code word, said Woods. I don't quit. That's how I saw myself. I was starting to get a sense of where I wanted to go in golf, but I also knew that being half black, I had better learn not to let insults penetrate. Insults are only words. I could control how I reacted to what people said. I had to figure that out on my own with my dad's help. And he helped me in ways that people thought were hurtful. So he would say things to him that Wood says, I'd been hearing things in tournaments since I was 7 or 8 years old. People said things to me between the tee and green. Golf, I'd heard... My dad was very good at it and used everything he could possibly use. It was some good stuff, and eventually I started laughing at it. It was like, you little piece of shit, or how do you feel being a little N, is what his dad was saying to him to toughen him up. How do you feel being a little N?
I can sense from the tone you're taking that you're appalled by this.
This is an old school style of parenting, for
sure. Oh, certainly is, but
and
we're not quite going back to, like, you know, the 1800s here,
no.
But we are going back 25 years.
It's clearly
21 years if he's talking about his first Masters, 22 years. I can see the merit in this. He was stealing his son for some serious abuse.
Yeah.
And why not it be your dad that's helping prepare you for some of the trash that you're going to have to listen to? Better him than somebody else. That'll be my take on it. And Woods talks not glowingly about it, but he talks about how it really prepared him and toughened him up.
Oh, yeah, sorry, if my tone has given the impression otherwise. Woods talks about this as being incredibly beneficial.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the way I would see it. The person who's most important in this conversation is Woods, and how he took it and how he felt while it was happening to him, not us.
Yeah.
And he's telling us, and if you've taken him at face value and on what he's saying on its merits, it worked, it had a purpose, it was for his own personal benefit.
I'm clearly not a psychiatrist, but instinctively I know that this is just not what you should be doing.
Yeah.
In no way should you be saying this to a kid repeatedly to build him up. It's just too corrosive.
Tiger worshipped his father. Yeah. He has never come out and been overly critical about anything that happened down through the years, even though everyone from the outside looked at certain incidents and thought, like that, is that the way to go? Earl would say, it worked. Look at what he achieved.
Are you off, Dave? Dave's off. Sorry.
Bye, Dave. He's just bored by...
in a cool way.
Not very successfully. Yeah, I would agree with you. I think that it may sum up and it may explain a lot of what happened to Tiger as life went on.
It's Earl.
A lack of respect.
Yeah. It's Earl, once again, not creating a human being. It's like, it's
people are going to treat you like shit, Tiger. No matter what you achieve, people are going to treat you like shit.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
Could you imagine saying that to your son to build him up? Anything like that?
Also, I do wonder, if this was happening on the range,
yeah,
and there's other people around.
Woods references that, people were looking on thinking it was wrong.
Exactly. Of course they were. All right. What he had to go through and what he did go through is a disgrace. We all accept that.
Yeah.
It shouldn't happen. But also, you're there among your peers, most of whom probably don't think like that.
Mm.
Most of whom don't look down at you when they realise and they understand the talent you have. They, you know, you settle in pretty quickly onto the tour. And they're like, wait a second, this guy puts up with this?
I know. I also don't think it really works. I mean, maybe you get used to Earl saying it to you every day and it becomes just a thing that you can laugh off. But still, the first time someone new says it to you, it must still be a little bit shocking because you've to digest the fact that, oh, that person is saying it. Now, maybe the 50th time that same person says it to you, it's less of a shock. But I think each new time someone new racially abuses you, I don't think you can ever get to a point where it doesn't register in some kind of way. Woods as well in the book talks about, and I actually didn't realise this because, what are we talking about, early 90s? That he wasn't allowed change in certain locker rooms at certain golf courses as his friends. I didn't think that was quite going on. Rocks thrown at his family home in Southern California, you know? So there was a bit more going on than maybe we had thought. Ewan Murray makes an interesting point where he says, you know, Woods has always been so guarded about matters of politics or race. And he said it's impossible to say whether time has enhanced his feelings regarding how he looks back on 1997, or maybe he's now just waiting for an opportune time to air what he had thought all along in his own words, you know?
Well, even the line there, and quoting him, of I was half black, always strikes me as strange when he uses that term.
Really?
Well, I understand why he's saying it,
yeah,
but it, again, for the people who always thought Tiger would be this huge icon for the black community, and he never seemed fully comfortable being that.
Mm. Yeah. I guess as well, he just wanted to not do any disservice to his mother in all of that. You know what I mean? I don't want to discount that huge side of my heritage as well. But I don't know, has he done interviews in the back of the book about this subject? Like, he was on Good Morning America, and that obviously was just, you know, light and fluffy, and he was doing pudding competitions and high fives. You'd like to see him, I was going to say with Charlie Rose, but I thought the Charlie Rose interview was dreadful, actually, when Woods gave him an hour of his time to relaunch his brand a couple of months ago. Rose just kept repeating the same theme over and over again, never went anywhere. But you'd like Woods to do a sit-down interview about this, fully in his own words, not something he's helped, you know, has been ghostwritten or written with him, and actually...
Yeah. Do you think he has that interview in him? Because if... So what you're trying to get out of it is this incredibly difficult upbringing that we only know bits of.
Yeah.
Does, I suppose, maybe the stuff with his father he will never look back on as being as tough as we see it.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with that. I just want to, but like, I would like to get a sense of the intensity of his feeling about having rocks thrown at the house, about not being allowed change in the same locker room. Like, is he angry about that? You know, I don't know. And maybe you need to hear someone speak about it to fully appreciate how they feel. Anyway, we'll try and get hold of the book. They're the only excerpts thus far, and maybe talk about it, or maybe see if we can get the ghost author on, or just get someone on who's read it in the next couple of weeks, because I definitely would be curious to read it for a host of reasons, especially if he's given some of this detail. But I think the broad picture was it's dull enough. That was what we were hearing. We're pretty much done. We've got an interesting show next week. in that myself and Nathan and Fionn are going to go to the GUI, Golf Union of Ireland Academy in Carton House. We're going to play some golf. We're going to hang out with Neil Manship and interview him. We're going to hit some shots on TrackMan, maybe get some tips. And if you have any tips, questions for Neil Manship, you can let us know. So that's what we're doing next Wednesday.
I'm looking forward to this.
Yeah.
Though I'm a bit nervous about TrackMan.
I know.
I don't think TrackMan's ever seen anything quite like me.
There'll be smoke coming out of it. We'll talk to you then next week.
All my exes wear Rolexes, but I reside right here in Dardanelle, all picket now. Little J.D. Starter kid right here.